Good morning. I'd like to call this Board of Supervisor meeting of May 7th, 2013 to order. It is 9 o'clock a.m. I would ask that everyone please stand, and I am going to ask Dr. John Walker to lead us in the Pledge of Allegiance. He's our public health officer.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you, Dr. Walker. Start off today's agenda with a presentation. May 2013, proclaim it as Asthma Awareness Month in Stanislaus County. Dr. Walker.
Good morning, Chair, members of the board. I would like to take this occasion to introduce Dr. Wallace Carroll, who has been the chair of our asthma coalition for 10 years and has chosen to step down this year, and just want to honor him for his service to the county. It's really just been a public-private partnership with many partners, and we just are thrilled that he's here. He's also accompanied by his wife, Lydia, who was a public health nurse for 15 years. Lydia, can you stand, please?
Yay.
And then if there are any members of the Asthma Coalition in the audience, can you also stand? I particularly want to thank Dolores Cisneros, who will remain standing, who was coordinator of our Asthma Coalition since its inception, and she retired in January after 30 years of county service. A hand for Dolores. Dr. Carroll.
I was told to take my time this morning. I'm just kidding, just kidding. As has been said, this is May is World Asthma Month, and we are celebrating that in the sense of bringing asthma awareness to our community. I represent the Stanislaus County Asthma Coalition, which has been over 10 years serving the county with what is now over 100 people. The coalition is made up of 40 different groups and well over 100 people who get together and do what we can to promote awareness of asthma. It includes nurses and respiratory therapists and pharmacists and physicians and public health people and health plans. And we have been very busy over these 10 years. We have the Asthma Flag Program, which is an air quality program at schools. I was just reading last night in preparation for this study done that children who have the Asthma Flag Program are much more aware of air quality and its effects on asthma and health than children who are not. We have asthma fairs. We just had one at Memorial Medical Center. There's community outreach. There's a lecture series for physicians and nurses and respiratory therapists in July coming up. And we have started this past year with community outreach projects, which are specific projects for reaching the community, again, for asthma awareness and appropriate treatment and so on. So I know you have a proclamation about that, and I appreciate very much your support, and that has been ongoing. I've deeply appreciated being a part of the Asthma Coalition for the last 10 years, along with Arlene Gutierrez, who's my co-chairman person, And it has been a wonderful ride. It has been a wonderful experience to serve the community this way. And I think John's idea about this 10 years ago was a wonderful idea. So thank you very much. Appreciate the coalition people who are here and representing the many people who serve voluntarily with the coalition. So, thank you.
It's very important to realize that there's about 100,000 people with asthma that have been diagnosed here in Stanislaus County, and about more than 20,000 of those are children. So it is essentially of epidemic proportion. And so that's the good part about proclaiming. As long as we bring the education component to people, it's always helpful. For yourself, when you started, not a single one of us was here. I think we've got a couple of nine-year guys, but you've been serving longer than we have, and that is amazing. Dolores, 30 years. It's amazing. And I say this over and over and over whenever we give proclamations out, when we honor someone, it's the service, because I know you weren't paid to do this, and this is what makes us a better community. It really does. So on behalf of the Board of Supervisors, not only do we proclaim May 2013 as Asthma Awareness, but also thank you for your service. And Lydia, thank you for allowing him to serve. I always appreciate that, too, when the spouse comes in, because anyone who's supportive, I'm sure she does some work for us. So thank you again on behalf of the on behalf of the Board of Supervisors. Good stuff. All right, we're going to move on to our second presentation, May 2013, as Mental Health Month in Stanislaus County. Madeline.
Good morning, Chairman Chiesa, members of the board, Ms. Mino, Mr. Doring. I'm Madeline Schlepfer, Behavioral Health Director. I'm very pleased to present this today, as we kick off May as Mental Health Month. The operative words in the theme is pathways to wellness. So mental health, pathways to wellness, I think the operative words are health and wellness. On October 31, 1963, President John F. Kennedy signed into law the Community Mental Health Act to provide federal funding for community mental health centers. For millions of Americans with mental illness, President Kennedy's final piece of legislation ended the nightmare of being warehoused and forgotten in institutions. Unfortunately, well, in the 50 years since, progress in the treatment of mental illness has been moving along. Unfortunately, for many years, the focus has been on mental illness. However, I believe that the conversation began to change when we realized that recovery was possible, even for individuals with serious mental illness. This realization has made a profound difference in how we view our work. Our department was a leader in this by the establishment of the Wellness Recovery Center in the late 1990s. We began to see that our clients had gifts to give others by virtue of their journeys from illness to health, and that their self-worth was increased by the opportunities to be of service to others. This year's theme, Pathways to Wellness, broadens the concept of mental health by focusing on strategies that can actually prevent the onset of illness or shorten the duration of an illness. Given the demands of daily life and trying to balance work and home, everyone is at risk for stress. Yet, there are strategies that can maintain emotional health and well-being. These strategies include a balanced diet, regular exercise, enough sleep, a sense of self-worth, development of coping skills that promote resilience, and connections to family, friends, faith, and community. These connections are the same ones that our local communities have identified time and again as pathways to emotional health and well-being. Even young children in elementary school will come up with the same ideas: family, faith, friends, and community. Using strategies that promote resiliency, strengthen mental health, and prevent substance use conditions will lead to improved general health, greater academic achievement and families that stay together. That is, a generally healthier society. Ultimately, being in recovery and or ensuring efforts to maintain wellness are essential to living a full and productive life. At this point, I'd like to introduce our Mental Health Board Chairperson, Jack Waldorf, who would like to say a few words.
Morning, Jack.
Oh, good morning. Since it's Mental Health Month, I just wanted to tell you a little bit, and I'll be brief, about a program where people who have a mental illness are reaching out to others who have a mental illness, and primarily to those who have a mental illness who are homeless. We have an empowerment center, and it's run by people who have a mental illness. They do job training. They also provide a safe place for people who are homeless to come and to associate with each other without the stigma that they sometimes encounter in the community at large. I had the opportunity last week to talk to seven of their homeless clients without the staff being present, so they were free to talk about the ups and downs of the program, but there weren't many downs. They were extremely supportive of what the program had done for them, and one of them had just obtained employment. And so I just wanted to tell you about that program. I think that it's doing a really wonderful job, and this exemplifies some of the things that we're able to do during this month that you're recognizing as Mental Health Month. So thank you.
We have a proclamation for you. I think it's important for everyone to recognize that one of our board priorities is healthy communities, essentially. It's the health of our communities, and that comes with physical health as well as mental health. And I was I served with Jack on the mental health board for, I believe, 3 years. Then Supervisor Withrow has had it for the last 2 years. And the board is made up of both the experts from the county, as well as community members, as well as consumers. And the greatest way to learn about what works and what doesn't work is from the consumers themselves. So it's a great representation on the board, and I think it serves a great purpose. So on behalf of the board, I will say again that we're very proud to proclaim May 2013 as Mental Health Awareness Month, and we appreciate what you do for the community, Jack. It's a good positive start to the meeting right there. All right, we're going to move on to public comment. I have two speaker cards. The first one is Alex Gonzalez. Good morning, Alex.
Good morning, everyone. Good morning, Board of Supervisors. I'm an in-home care provider. Me and my dad live together, and I take care of him. He worked 45 years as a farm laborer in the almond orchards, and he's 80 years old now, and he's had 3 strokes, and he has Parkinson's. So numerous times I've had to rush him to the emergency, and he comes out and nurse him back to health. So, you know, it's a 24-hour job. And my mother, she's 78 years old, and she raised 9 children. And she lives separate from us. I have to rent her a small little house because her public and her health. And about 3 years ago, she had a brain tumor that was going to kill her, and they told me she was going to be a vegetable, but she made it. So I brought her home from the hospital and nursed her back to health. And then just last May, I rushed her to the emergency, and they said she had 2 hours to live, so I had to call up all of my brothers. And my nephew, he was in the Army, he served 2 tours in Iraq. He came home with a Purple Heart and a Bronze Star. anyway, everybody got together, and my mom pulled through, and she made it again. So I had to nurse her back to health, and they put a pacemaker in her, so she's doing okay. So I got both of them stabilized now, but it takes a lot of work. And I'm just trying to say that I think we should put the elderly before above everybody, because one day we're going to wind up elderly, and someone's got to take care of us too, you know. So I'm just saying that, you know, that the in-home program, I think I'm very grateful for the program, because if it wasn't for that, I don't know how I would have made it, you know. It doesn't pay much, but it pays enough to pay for the gas and a little bit of groceries and the rent, and I'm grateful for that. And I want to say thank you, the Board of Supervisors, for allowing this program to continue. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Alex. Next up, I have Mary Birch.
Good morning, everyone.
Good morning.
My name is Mary Birch, and I'm a caregiver. I began my career at the age of 7, taking care of my siblings while my mother and father worked in the cotton fields. All we had back then was an old wood stove to cook on, no running water, no bathroom. I was taught at an early age how to build a fire in the old wood stove and cook a meal for 7 people, and I'm very proud of that. It instilled in me a great sense of caring for my loved ones or whomever may need my help. I feel very fortunate at my age that I am still able to do my job. God has given to me a special purpose in life that not everyone can do. It has to be done with a great sense of care for the elderly, the sick, and the disabled. And if it isn't done with love and care, then that person, I think, should find employment elsewhere. This also pertains to some, but not all, of our elected officials. We are all brothers and sisters, and our main job on this earth is to take care of one another. So in saying all of that, once again, I am here to ask you to do the right thing and give to all of our workers a living wage. I have always considered myself a fairly intelligent woman, but for the life of me, I don't seem to be able to understand why our job is not at the top of the list for a wage similar to, let me see now, our school teachers, our politicians, our decision makers, the ones whom we have entrusted to take care of all the people. Some of you make over $200,000 to $300,000 a year. One of our teachers was put on paid leave a while back, and he was paid over $300,000 because he was on leave for a little over a year. He didn't even work. This just infuriates me. It isn't fair or morally the right thing to do. I would like for someone to make me understand why the job that we do is not considered important enough for a decent living wage. I also would like to know what is taking so long for you to make a decision about giving us a raise. I decided in my speech to you all today not to go into all the details of what will happen to our people if we aren't given a decent wage to live on. You already know our workers will have to find employment somewhere else. Our people will have to find a place other than their own home to live. And if that happens, it will surely shorten their lives. They will become unhappy, uncared for in the right and loving way, and depressed. And I'm sure that none of you would want that to happen to them. We are counting on you all to do the right thing and put our people first. Help us protect them and give to them a quality-based care. So here I am once again, and I thank you very much for your patience with all of us when we come before you pleading for your help and putting our people first. If you will please bear with me for just another moment, I would like to read you a quote that I read the other day, which I feel pertains to our quest. I sit on a man's back, choking him and making him carry me, and yet assure myself and others that I am very sorry for and wish to lighten his load by all possible means, except getting off his back. Thank you.
Thank you, Mary. Those are all the speaker cards I have. Does anyone else want to address this board during public comment?
Good morning, Mr. Chairman, members of the board, Ms. Nino, Mr. Dorian, ladies and gentlemen. Just very quickly, because nobody said you can take all the time you want. The LCR is going to have a meeting on Thursday. It's going to be at the Mary Stuart Rogers Building. It's at MJC West, and it's going to run from 11:30 to 1:30. One of the interesting things is they've invited the Modesto Chamber of Commerce. They're going to present their pathways to growth. Now, as far as I know, this is the first opportunity that the general public has been invited to see this. We know they've been going around meeting with small groups of people. So this is an opportunity for anyone out there that wants to come. It's going to be a catered lunch. Got to get a hold of Maggie before noon tomorrow. But here's a chance for the citizens and yourselves to meet with the lobbyists of the Building Industry Association and the Chamber of Commerce, for indeed that's what they are. But it's their counterplan to Denny Jackman's RUO. I'm curious to hear it. Again, they haven't told, maybe you gentlemen have been aware of it, I haven't. So this is an opportunity for the public to actually hear what's going on behind the scenes in Stanislaus County. I thank you for your time.
Emerson, could you clarify what LCR is?
I'm sorry, it's the Latino Community Roundtable. Again, I'll go through the spiel just very shortly. It's going to be at the Mary Stuart Rogers Building. That's the Modesto Chamber, excuse me, the Modesto JC West, 2201 Blue Gum. Okay. It's a chance for the public to see the insidious, my term, not LCR's, lobbyists from the Building Industry Association and the Chamber of Commerce and their plans for what they want to see Modesto do. For indeed, they are the puppeteers behind the curtain. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Emerson. Okay, any other comments? If not, I'll move on to the consent calendar. I have a speaker card that wants to comment on A2A. I guess we'll take that comment before we move forward with it. And that is Robert Shelton to comment on 2A, which is establishing new and amended fees, existing fees collected by the Department of Parks and Recreation.
Okay, thank you for letting me speak. My name is Robert Shelton. I am a disabled veteran. I would like to propose to you to reinstate the POW, or Prisoner of War Pass, that was established 2 years ago and was dropped from the agenda last year. And what that means is the Prisoner of War may have the service of all the parks in Stanislaus County at no cost to them. It's every state in the union has this pass, and it's only for the prisoner boards. It's not for disability veterans. You have to be 100% or a prisoner board. And the only pass that's acceptable is this one here with the state logo. Now, I was out at the Stanislaus County Reservoir as a camp host for 2.5 years. At most, there was only three POWs at any one time. They dropped the pass for some reason, and I would like to have it reinstated if you could. Thank you. Right. Any questions?
No. Any questions?
Thank you for your time.
And I guess we'll recycle this through the Veterans Commission. This would be the right place.
Right.
Okay. I guess I'll answer, Robert, that the Veterans Commission had looked at this and okayed it, but I would be willing to send this portion back and put you in contact. I do have your number here. I'll put you in contact with them because we're letting them do the recommending back to our committee, back to the board, full board. Okay?
Thank you, sir.
Okay, thank you. So now we'll move on to the consent calendar. Are there any supervisors that would like to remove anything? Anyone from the audience want to remove anything? Okay, we'll take the consent calendar, agenda items A through 1 through 4, B 1 through 6, C 1 through 6.
Motion to approve.
Motion to approve.
Second that.
Motion and a second. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Passes 5-0. Okay, being past the time of 9:05, we're going to move to our scheduled matter, which is a public hearing to consider Planning Commission's recommendation for approval and use permit for application PNL 2012-006, Marring Private Airport.
And Mr. Chairman, I have a conflict on this. John is not only a client, but I'm married to a sister and a beautiful girl.
Sweet.
And I will have to step down on that.
Let it be noted that Supervisor Withrow is funny, and he's left the dais.
Good morning, Supervisor.
Excellent.
Good morning, Supervisor Chiesa and members of the board. CEO Nino, Mr. Dorian Angelofredis, Planning Director, with me this morning to present the project is Joshua Mann.
Thank you, Director Freitas. Good morning, members of the board. Today we have use permit application PLN 2012-06, Marion Private Airport. The location of the project site is on Cox Road, which is south of Frank Cox Road and north of Condon Avenue in the Wesley Grayson area. The current general plan designation is agriculture, with the zoning designation being A240 General Ag. Here's an aerial photo that shows the site as it currently exists today. And you'll notice Cox Road along the northeast portion of the property. You also have a southern-south lateral that parallels the property line to the south. As far as the project itself, it's a request to establish a private airport. This will include a 2,800 linear foot runway, includes three aircraft hangars totaling about 7,300 square feet, and it's on top of two parcels totaling 97 acres, both of which are under Williamsonette contract. One clarification I wanted to make is that although there's no on-site storage of fuel, delivery of fuel may occur on occasion to the airport. The applicants provided a statement that is basically said that the intent of the airport is to provide the applicant the ability to aerial survey of his agricultural crops throughout property in the Central Valley. The airport will also be used for private use and for transporting the applicant's packing business customers, which is adjacent, kind of northwest of the project site. It's estimated there'll be around 5 to 10 flights per week, and at this time the surface of the runway is undetermined. Could be anywhere from a hard-packed dirt to a concrete or asphalt-type material. One thing I wanted to point out is that although we don't know what the runway may be, the area around the hangars have been identified as being concrete. Here's a site plan that shows in yellow the proposed runway area. Notice this is one parcel, and then the second parcel I mentioned earlier is right here with the property line running down the middle. Another thing to point out is that the applicant will be using water storage at the packing business he maintains to the, I guess it would be to your left. The red line here shows the proposed water line that would service fire protection water for the three hangars. Here's just a close-up showing it again. Here are the three hangars. You have two that are approximately the same size and then a larger one to the left. Here's some proposed air traffic patterns. This would be a south takeoff. And then here's another one proposing to a north takeoff. In the Stanislaus County Zoning Ordinance, section 2120.040 allows private airports through a use permit process. This includes approval by the Board of Supervisors. It also requires review by the Airport Land Use Commission. And in this case, it took place on November 1st, 2012. Furthermore, section 2120.040 states that private airports may be approved if they're found consistent with the general plan and county policies. And this would include Appendix 5B of the safety element of the general plan, which provides five siting standards for new airports or helipads. The first of which is provide a clear zone for a distance of 200 feet from the end of the runway. The clear zone shall start at the ends of the runway and at a point 200 feet from the end of the runway and be three times the width of the runway. Here's a site plan, and I've highlighted in red the clear zone areas on the end of the runway. Policy number two states that it shall be no closer to any neighboring dwelling, barn, shop, poultry building, or similar ag structure than A, 1,000 feet from the ends of the runway, or B, 500 feet to the sides of the runway. Again, here's an aerial photo that shows approximately the green box would be an area 500 feet to the sides of the runway and 1,000 feet to the ends of the, or from the end of the runway. The third of these policies is that it be located so that air surface or surface traffic shall not constitute a nuisance or danger to neighboring property, farms, dwellings, or structures. The fourth policy is show that that adequate controls or measures will be taken to prevent offensive dust, noise, vibration, or bright lights. The final policy is obtain, when necessary, approval of the California Department of Transportation, Division of Aeronautics, prior to the issuance of the use permit. I'm going to go ahead and speak about a couple of issues that came up during the process of this project. There were concerns raised on the potential noise levels associated with the proposed airport operations, mainly from the aircraft noise. This concern was also voiced by Caltrans Division of Aeronautics through a letter that staff received. The Airport Land Use Commission meeting that I spoke of that took place on November 1st, also there were some noise issues raised at the meeting. The commissioners at that time didn't feel strongly about it, but there was enough of a concern that there may be a potential impact. Following this meeting with the Airport Land Use Commission, planning staff had requested a noise assessment be conducted. This is attached to Exhibit G of the Planning Commission staff report. The noise assessment reviewed potential sensitive noise receptors in the area. In this case, they consisted of three single-family residents within the project vicinity. Here again is another aerial photo that shows the approximate location of the three closest residential structures. Just to the side, we have one that's about 800 feet. To the northwest, we have one that's about 2,300 feet. And to the southeast, we'll have one about 2,400 feet. The noise assessment provided basically determined that the projected noise levels would be approximately 34.5 to 47.3 decibels. These projected noise levels are well below the state noise compatibility standards of 65 dB CNEL and the county standard of 60 dB CNEL. Also, as a part of this project, staff had prepared a negative declaration based on the comments, and that is what's being proposed today. Staff believes the specific findings listed under Section 21.20.040 and the Williamson Act findings that the airport will be primarily related to an agricultural use can be made in this case. These findings are listed in Exhibit A of the Planning Commission staff report or on page 2 of the board report. At the Planning Commission meeting on April 4, 2013, staff recommended the Planning Commission recommend approval to the board subject to actions 1 through 4 outlined in Exhibit A of the Planning Commission staff report. Ultimately, there was a 7-0 vote to recommend that the board approve the use permit as requested. That concludes staff's presentation, and we'd be happy to answer any questions you may have. Thank you.
Are there any questions of staff?
Mr. Chairman, can I get a little more clarification on the Williamson Act? How come this would be allowed under Williamson Act? Is it required for ag?
Well, the Williamson Act finding is that the airport has to primarily be related to an agricultural use. In this case, the applicant has stated that he will be conducting aerial surveying of his crops. Due to the distance, you know, they are spread out throughout the Central Valley, that he would need to use the aircraft to survey, given the distance of the property.
Okay. I noticed there wasn't going to be any fuel storage on this. Is it just not allowed, or he just doesn't want to put fuel tanks on it?
In this case, it wasn't something that he proposed. It may very well be allowed. I don't think it's a case of it being not permitted. But in this case, it's something that he's identified. Generally, he was looking at fueling at one of the region's airports, whether it's Modesto or Oakdale or a surrounding county's airport. He did indicate it, there may be limited needs for fueling on site. In that case, he would contact a fuel transportation business that would come on site, fuel the aircrafts. But he did also mention that would be pretty limited. the main intent is to fuel at neighboring airports.
Okay. Are there going to be any lights on the runway?
No lighting is proposed, which would basically restrict them to a daytime use.
And what would it take to you? Would he have to come back to the board to put lights in?
That would be a modification to the use permit and may require board approval, but we could probably do it as a staff approval at a staff level or take it to the Planning Commission. The actual airport itself needs to come to the board for approval, but the discretionary action to amend the use permit could just go to the Planning Commission. So if you were to add light, since that was never considered as part of this, it would be a Planning Commission item.
Yeah, I would think that more problems would occur if this was a nighttime activity. I can't imagine as a daytime activity that there will be much of an issue, a noise or the disruption.
One more. Could it be a staff approval, too, if he wanted to put a fuel tank in? I just think that that would be something that he may want in the future, and I'd hate for him to have to come back through this process. I know there's a bunch of regulatory agencies that would get involved in that, including the Air District, but I wouldn't want him to have to come back through Board of Supervisors just to add a fuel tank.
Yeah, and basically, like Director Frey stated, to modify the use permit is what it would take. Most likely something like that can be done through the staff level permit, staff approval permit. That also would include circulation to, like you mentioned, the Air District, to DER, to our fire, and any other responsible agency or interested agency.
Any other questions of staff? If not, I'm going to open the public hearing. Anyone like to comment? Please come forward, state your name for the record.
Good morning, Supervisors. I'm John Maring. I'm the one proposing this airport. I think I should clarify a couple things. We have determined that the surface will be concrete of the runway. And as far as the lights, there's been some discussion. This was discussed earlier, and I believe the number we used, we are planning on putting lights in the runway. And at this point, I think we talked about maybe, I was questioned how many often would this airport be used at night. I think the number was less than 5% or 2 or 3%. Seldom, you know, all the years we had Patterson as our airport, we did have lights there. It was very, very seldom used at night. But lights add a safety element to the airport, and so we are going to put lights down the sides of the runway. And then as far as the fueling, we discussed, I do have fuel trucks from Skytrax. Fuel trucks will be placed in Modesto, and I was able to purchase a couple of the older fuel trucks. So that's the intent on the fuel, and we did talk about fueling from fuel trucks. So I think that clarifies a couple things that I don't want to be misled here. And if there's any other questions, I'd be glad to answer them.
You had housed your planes at Patterson Airport.
Correct. Of the airplanes that are going to, all of these airplanes were housed at Patterson until it was closed in 1 year ago.
Yeah, and where do you have them now?
Modesto.
Modesto. Quite a drive, so. Okay. Any questions for the applicant?
No.
Okay.
Thank you.
Any other questions? If not, I'll close the public hearing. Bring it back to the board for action. Comments?
Mr. Chairman, I'm in support of this. I still don't understand the Williamson part. You know, I've always been under the impression that ag activities that go on Williamson Act lands is because there's no alternative that needs to go there. But the alternative is he's at an airport. And so I still don't understand that part. Went through the staff report. I just don't understand that part of it.
Locally, the Williamson Act allows for the board to permit uses on agricultural land if it can meet the principles of compatibility. It doesn't necessarily set a threshold where there isn't any, where it's based on there being another alternative. It's based on whether or not there's a relationship to agricultural use. In this case, given the operator, the property owner's extensive farming operation, and that essentially he's using the plane in the same way that a local farmer would use a truck, there is that connection to the agricultural use. We do know in this case it will not be, it will be primarily used for agriculture. There will be some other use out of it, although he's not proposing to operate a public airport here. It really is a local decision as to whether or not we feel that this meets our local standards for what should be permitted on William Snack land. When this initially came in, we did expect to get some negative feedback from Department of Conservation, who in the past has questioned a lot of these uses, and there's been, I believe, two referrals to Department of Conservation, and in both cases they have not raised any issues. So this is truly a local decision as to whether or not we feel that this meets principles of compatibility. From a staff perspective, we're looking at the primary use being an extension of the property owner's farming operation.
So I guess it would be consistent of the same position I had on truck parking in the ag zone as well. Thank you.
Supervisor Monteith.
Well, if I understand your definition of the Livingston Act, if for some reason at a later date this property was sold, then it still would have to remain in agricultural use. In other words, agriculture use is what qualifies this piece of property to be used as an airport, correct?
Correct.
So if for some reason there was a discontinuation of ownership that had been used for that purpose, would they have to come back to us to verify that that still qualifies?
The use permit is conditioned that it will operate as was described to us, which was primarily for agricultural use. So if it did sell where you had somebody who was, had no relationship or connection to agricultural use and the property was still under a Williams Act, the county would be able to review
this. So the permit is to the property, not the owner?
The permit is to the property, correct.
Okay, and the property always would have to qualify under the circumstances so designated.
Correct.
What you're saying. Thank you.
Just one other question. I noticed it's on two different parcels. Is that unusual to have a project that goes over the, in two separate parcels rather than one? I guess there must not be a problem with it since they approved it.
It's not the most common configuration, but we have in place easements so that the use can operate on the two properties.
Any other questions? All right. If not, I'll entertain a motion.
Okay, motion to approve staff recommendations 1 through 4.
Okay, we have a motion on the floor.
Second.
The second. All right. All those in favor say aye. Aye.
Aye.
Opposed?
No.
Motion passes 3-1. Thank you very much, the staff. Secretary? Okay. Now we're going to go to agenda item A5.
Mr. Chairman, I stepped down on this issue last time it came before us. Although it does not change health department fees are listed in the agenda item, so I'm going to recuse myself.
Thank you. Let it be known for the record that Supervisor O'Brien has left the dice. Okay. CEO Nino.
We are just asking approval to adopt and waive the second reading of Ordinance C-S-1127, amending existing fees collected by the Department of Environmental Resources for this board's consideration today.
Okay. Any comments from the board? Any comments from the audience? Easy, easy, lemon squeezy. Bring it back to the board.
And motion to approve.
Motion to approve.
Second.
And the second from Supervisor Monteith. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion carries 4-0.
Thank you.
Okay, now we're moving on to item B7, consideration and approval of the third quarter financial report for the fiscal year 2012-13. And Assistant CEO Risen or CEO Nino? Someone will start it out.
We sure will, Chair.
Good morning, Chairman Chiesa, members of the board, Mr. Doering. It is a pleasure to bring you our third quarter financial report this morning. I would like to thank our department heads and county staff for their work in preparing this report. I have Stan Risen, our assistant CEO, along with Raul Mendez, our senior management consultant, and David Jones, senior management consultant, here today at the staff table, along with a number of other staff behind them available to answer any questions upon the conclusion of this report. We project the county budget to end the year in a positive fiscal position. Of particular note, the economic recovery is underway with modest signs of improvement in our local economy. We continue to be conservative and realistic, but hopeful as we look at our budget preparation for next fiscal year, because we are already in the midst of it to the point of even arranging board briefing soon for our, we are asking you today to approve a public hearing date of June 11th, and that will be the second week in June of this year. The county will continue to focus on maintaining core service levels, rebuilding reserves, and building capacity to address future challenges. I would like to make a special note that I realize that the last 6 years have been painful, and the public has seen a reduction of services, and we are working with fewer county employees. Everyone from the public to labor and leadership has made sacrifices, which has helped the organization weather the storm. Employees have taken pay and benefit cuts. The public has experienced fewer and sometimes less convenient services, but everyone has pitched in to make it work. I would like to say on a positive note, as a result of these past challenges we have faced and overcome, we are stronger, a more focused organization, and we're ready to continue to creatively move forward into the future, because we have a lot to accomplish as a community and as an organization. And Mr. Risen will take it from here. So thank you.
Well, good morning, Chairman Chiesa, board members, Ms. Nino, Mr. Doering. As Ms. Nino indicated, my name is Stan Risen. I'm with the Chief Executive Office, and joining me at the staff table, Raul Mendez, senior management consultant, who will be assisting me in this morning's presentation, and David Jones, who prepared our PowerPoint presentation. I'll take just a minute to thank the budget team. This is a, much like when Supervisor Withrow goes through his tax season, this is probably the most taxing time for the budget team. We're actually working, have been working on two budgets at the exact same time, the third quarter report that we're bringing to you today and the proposed budget. So if we get confused even what year we're in sometimes, it's because we have actually two budget processes going on at the same time. But one wonderful budget team. Very dedicated, very loyal, hardworking. I'm pleased to tell you that for the 10th year in a row, we've received the Distinguished Budget Presentation Award from the Government Finance Officers Association, and we're very proud of that, and the budget team is what has made that happen. Third quarter report that we're bringing to you today is our last report to you for the 12-13 fiscal year, and gives us an opportunity to make any final adjustments that need to be made to make sure we end the year in a positive fiscal position. It gives us a chance to also set up the proposed budget, so we go over some of the challenges and opportunities we're facing, and as Ms. Nino mentioned, it gives us a chance also to set the public hearing for a proposed budget. As usual, our third quarter report is organized around your seven board priorities. Just as a quick recap, the 2012-2013 adopted final budget that you approved last September totaled just over $984 million. Throughout our report, the third quarter report, you'll see us reference what's called the operating budget, or sometimes we refer to it as the legal budget. And when you take the final budget, we also have any adjustments that you've made throughout the year, either at the first quarter or mid-year or third quarter. We have adjustments that you made as part of agenda items throughout the year. And then we have certain spending authority that carried over from last year, purchase orders that were set up, obligations that were created. And when you add all those together, our legal or operating budget is just over $1 billion. Third quarter report for you today has recommendations totaling $16.5 million in increased appropriations. offset by over $18.7 million of increased revenue. So we're actually reducing our reliance on one-time funding and fund balance as a result of these recommendations. This pie chart shows you where the recommendations primarily are in the third quarter report. You can see that the largest, by far, adjustments are in our health and healthy community. Over $12 million of that is related to our community services agency, some in our health services agency. And next, you'll see efficient delivery of public services at just under $2 million, and most of that is related to our medical self-insurance, although there's a few other adjustments as well, and we're going to go over those in a little bit more detail by our priority. So the first priority we want to talk to you about is safe community. You can see those departments that make up our safe community in our budget, and really only two adjustments here. Technical adjustment in ICGIS related to depreciation of intangible assets. With some, we run by accounting standards that are governed by GASB, and a number of years ago they required us to start booking the value of some of the programming we've done in ICGIS as an asset. And consequently, we have to depreciate it as well. And so this is an adjustment to reflect last year's programming activity, the value of that as an asset. So it really has no impact on our cash position. It's more of an accounting technical adjustment. In county court funding, we are experiencing a revenue shortfall of about $525,000, related primarily to just a drop in court fines and fees, and the fact that in our revenue recovery division, we were down some collectors and it hasn't been coming in as it has historically, but just less fines and fees in general. But also we experienced a loss in revenue as the courts pulled out of some of our facilities this last year. And so we have less revenue coming in, lease revenue to county court funding. At this point, I'm going to turn the presentation over to Mr. Mendez, who's going to walk you through a number of the other board priorities.
Thank you, Stan, and good morning, everybody. Raul Mendez, Senior Management Consultant with the Chief Executive Office. The slide before you lists the county departments that are within the health and community, that priority area. As Stan mentioned, our healthy community, the priority area, is showing the largest recommended adjustments in the third quarter financial report, with an increase of $15.2 million in appropriations, offset by $20.8 million in revenue. This priority area continues to be the most volatile in our county budget, obviously very dependent on changes that happen at the federal and state level to impact the way we deliver programs and services here locally. For BHRS, we are recommending an increase of $267,000 in managed care for fee for service claims and mental health treatment costs for children. As mentioned above, BHRS is responsible for mental health treatment costs for children placed in group homes by child welfare and probation. Moving on to community service agency, an increase of appropriations of $12.8 million is recommended, offset by an increase of $14.7 million in federal and state allocations, 2011 and 1991 realignment funds, to fully budget these funds in the current year. The receipt of one-time realignment funding approved by the board at mid-year, coupled with the additional realignment funding recommended here at third quarter, completely mitigates the department's match contingency need for foster care in the current year. As the board may recall, during the approval of the mid-year financial report, you approved adjustments for CSA that included $2.3 million of unanticipated realignment revenues. That was due to the county for prior year caseload growth in specific mandated programs. With the third quarter financial report and based on 6 months of actuals that are now available, the department is now projecting an additional $2.3 million increase to the realignment base as a result of current statewide sales tax trends. The one-time realignment revenue approved at mid-year and the additional recommended at third quarter for CSA is expected to result in a positive net county cost impact. approximately $1.9 million will be returned to the county general fund as part of the fiscal year end close process to fund future exposures. An adjustment is also recommended in in-home supportive services provider wages to reflect implementation of the state IHSS maintenance of effort, program utilization, and expenditure trends. Federal and state funding will help cover the cost, the county's cost, or funding obligation in the current year for IHSS wages and benefits, public authority administration, and IHSS administration. An increase in estimated revenue of $9.7 million, along with appropriations of $9.2 million, are recommended in the third quarter report for this program. In public economic assistance, an increase in $2 million is recommended to fund foster care and adoptions kinship mandated programs. This adjustment is funded from 1990-91 and 2011 realignment revenue, anticipated to be received in the current year. In the Health Services Agency, also at mid-year, the board approved an adjustment in the Indigent Healthcare Program budget, or ICP, to accommodate nearly a $4.6 million exposure that was identified at that time. If the board recalls, the strategy at that point was to tap into clinic and ancillary services and the retained earnings and available balance that was available then. The direction that the staff received was to bring back this recommendation as part of the third quarter report once we had a better sense of what actual or how actuals were tracking. So rather than making the adjustment to clinic and ancillary services at that time, at mid-year, we were directed to bring it back, and that's what's before you today. HSA has completed its thorough review and analysis of both budgets as directed by the board and determined that the anticipated exposure in IACP for the current year has increased to nearly $6.1 million. This exposure is driven by increases in applications, enrollment, and a demand for services. And additionally, the average cost per patient has seen an estimated 5% increase from the prior year. The program has also seen an increased demand for specialty services. As the demand for specialty services continues to rise throughout the medical community, it is more difficult to acquire specialty providers to accept MIA patients or medically indigent adult patients at the standard IHCP reimbursement rate, thereby driving up costs. The Health Services Agency did a complete review of the clinic and ancillary services budget and determined that it could absorb the full exposure of the IHCP program in the current year. Addressing this one-time exposure, or this exposure on a one-time basis, is expected to deplete the retained earnings almost completely in clinic and ancillary services. It is approximately about $130,000 that the department anticipates having at the end of the year. The adjustments included in the third quarter financial report for clinic and ancillary services and the Indigent Healthcare Program are essentially a continuation of what was started at the mid-year to address the current year exposure. In IACP, the additional appropriations for the full exposure in the current year are recommended, along with the operating transfer in from clinic and ancillary services. The Chief Executive Office has worked very closely with the Health Services Agency to determine the additional appropriations needed in clinic and ancillary services to accomplish this budget adjustment. Clinic and ancillary services has adequate spending authority to accommodate a good portion of the adjustment and transfer. The Chief Executive Office continues to work closely with the department to evaluate this exposure or the exposure in these two programs in the subsequent years. The next slide lists the departments that are within the board priority of a strong local economy. In this priority area, we are only seeing minor changes. For a strong local economy, an increase in appropriations of $200,000 is recommended with a corresponding increase in revenue. This adjustment is for Alliance WorkNet, whom was awarded grant funding from the Central California Workforce Collaborative for assessment, case management, various training components, job development, and support services. The two-year contract was funded at the $2.5 million level, and the department anticipates budgeting the additional revenue for these employment and training services in the upcoming recommended budget. The next slide lists departments that are within the or priority of efficient delivery of public services. For efficient delivery in public services, a net increase of nearly $2 million in appropriations is recommended, with a $1.8 million increase in revenue and the anticipated use of $3.8 million in fund balance and retained earnings. In the Risk Management Medical Self-Insurance Fund, an increase of $2.1 million in appropriations and a decrease of $800,000 in estimated revenue are recommended. Use of $600,000 in Risk Management Professional Liability Insurance retained earnings is also recommended to partially offset a reduction in department charges in the current year. As mentioned previously, County Council is projecting a $288,489 revenue shortfall, and as a result, an increase in their net county cost contribution is recommended. This shortfall was first identified in the mid-year financial report, and the necessary adjustment based on actual need is recommended and funded from appropriations for contingencies. The lack of billable hours is due to the leaves of absences, and the Chief Executive Office continues to work with the department to determine ways to correct this issue moving forward. Also recommended is the use of $100,000 in Federal Help America Vote Act funds for the purchase of equipment necessary for the Clerk Recorder Elections Office to conduct future elections. This slide depicts the staffing recommendations that are included as part of the third quarter report. There are no position allocation changes proposed in the report, but there are two technical adjustments that are recommended. One includes a transfer of 26 positions from probation institutions to probation juvenile commitment facility in support of the opening of the new facility. The second includes a transfer of 26 positions from probation field services to community correction partnership budget to better track public safety realignment funds. The total position allocation for our organization remains the same at $3,837. At this time, then Stan and I will walk you through or touch on some of the challenges and opportunities that are facing our organization and our community.
You're going to stop you for 1 second to clarify.
Yes.
So we don't go back. The 26 positions are irrespective of each other, right? They just, the numbers came out the same, but those are two separate transfers.
Correct. Yeah. In challenges and opportunities, there is significant attention being placed on the implementation of the Patient Protection and Affordable Care Act. The county is impacted both as a health care provider and also as an employer. Impacts of the Affordable Care Act as a health care provider are difficult to project. There is a county interdepartment team consisting of the CEO, Health Services Agency, Behavioral Health and Recovery Services, Community Service Agency, and the Department of Child Support Services that have been meeting frequently over the last several months, working on evaluating the local impact of the ACA implementation. Now, that includes both implementation of the exchange and the Medi-Cal expansion, both the mandatory and also the optional components. The Act calls for implementation by January 1st, 2014, which, as we know, is very quickly approaching. Early discussions with the state have focused on the two implementation models proposed by the governor, essentially a state versus a county option for implementation. Counties are fairly united in preferring implementation of a statewide program, with the state at risk for the financing of this program and the counties and the state realigning responsibilities. As openly reported in the media, the state is looking to recoup county cost savings that may result from implementation. The county team is working closely with CSAC, the California State Association of Counties, and Chairman Chiesa, and our legislative advocates on developing a formula option for how health cost savings are retained by the county and the state. As an employer, those businesses with 50 or more employees must provide a minimum level of health benefits by January 1st, 2014. Stanislaus County is being very deliberate in planning compliance with its new standard. The Chief Executive Office has begun evaluating the organization in light of the requirement and is working with county departments accordingly. A draft policy will be brought to the board for a July 1st, 2013 implementation in the near future. In Health and Human Services, we've previously reported to the board the ongoing challenge with increasing inpatient psychiatric hospitalization and costs. These are projected to continue into the future and are being discussed and thought of as we prepare our budget for the upcoming year. In response, your board approved a strategy using Mental Health Service Act funds, which focus on a collaborative approach to a continuum of care with individuals with serious mental health issues. Implementation of this strategy continues to be a focus. We have previously reported to the public of the pressure of the BHRS fund balance, Behavioral Health and Recovery Services fund balance, which is projected to be depleted by or during budget year 2013-2014. As your board knows, the department has historically relied on this fund balance to address exposures that may arise during the operating year. We would like to note that the Psychiatric Health Facility, or the PUF, is targeted to be in operation in 2014. This is a key component of the strategic planning effort to lessen the county's general fund exposure to BHRS. Our forecast also shows a combined $5.9 million projected exposure in managed care and public guarding for the next budget year. Recommendations for addressing these exposures will be brought forward to your board as part of our budget process for budget year 2013-2014. As we look towards next budget year, the Community Service Agency, Child Welfare Services, foster care costs are projected to increase with caseload growth and extended eligibility for foster youth over 18. Health Services Agency may also see increased costs for their MIA program as a result of the Affordable Care Act, but that remains to be evaluated over the next upcoming months. We will certainly know more by the governor's May revise, which is anticipated in the next week or so. Update on the capital projects. Our outstanding capital projects team, led by Chief Operations Officer Patricia Hill-Thomas, continues to do great work and progress in significant projects that they are leading. We would like to note that the relocation of the $5.5 million Coroner Public Administration Video Visitation and Medical Records Facility to 7th Street is projected to be completed by the spring of 2014. The $4.1 million Juvenile Justice Center roofing, heating, ventilation, and air conditioning, or HVAC, replacement is scheduled to be complete by December of 2014. At this time, I'd like to turn it over back to Stan Weisen to conclude the presentation.
I'm going to take you through just a few more challenges and opportunities. One that you've heard me talk to you quite a bit about is our pension charges. On the good news front, 2013-14, our next budget year will be the last year that we'll be paying our pension obligation bond. So hopefully that will help provide some relief as we address future retirement charges. As we bring the proposed budget to you next week, overall we saw about a 16% increase in retirement charges for 13-14. And we anticipate that we will continue to see growth in those retirement charges over the next several years. On a good note, though, our retirement system is having a very good year when it comes to investment earnings. This is the second solid year of double-digit growth in investment earnings, and so that should help relieve at least some pressure that we would have otherwise experienced. In our self-insurance funds, we kind of a good news, bad news thing. We have a couple funds that are really tracking very strong. Unemployment charges have dropped significantly, and as such, our charges to departments for the 13-14 year are down dramatically, and we have some, we'll be able to use some of our retained earnings to help offset those charges. So like I think before we were charging over $300 per employee to a department for unemployment. For 13-14, with the use of retained earnings, I think we're down around the $50 employee range, so that's good news. Part of the reason clinics is able to help us with our IHCP program deficit is because we were able to almost completely offset professional liability charges in this current year, and that freed up appropriations. This is basically our medical malpractice insurance, of which HSA paid a significant amount. So that's on the good news front. We do have several funds that are projected in the year with a deficit, both our medical health insurance, our general liability, and workers' compensation. General liability we've known about, and we've been before you before, and we have established a five-year plan to pay that back. Workers' comp is also anticipated to end the year in a deficit. We will return to you with a plan to address that as well.
Public safety realignment obviously is a huge topic for county government these days, both over concern about impacts to the community and also our funding to be able to address what we are experiencing. I can tell you that even looking at probation's last report, the caseloads that we're experiencing continue to exceed the even the revised state projections of what we they thought we would be experiencing. Our community corrections partnership is currently working, and on our phase three plan, we anticipate a slight increase in base funding, more around the $14 million level compared to phase two funding of $12 million. But unfortunately, as you're aware of, Valley counties as a whole were extremely disadvantaged in the last formula allocation, and Stanislaus County being one of those. When many parts of the state were experiencing double-digit increases in their realignment funding, I think on the whole, Valley counties received about 2%. So our chief executive officer has been very engaged, as is many of you, in trying to address this inequity. Property tax administration fees, you had an item on your agenda, on your consent calendar today. Obviously, this represented a huge loss of revenue when the Supreme Court came down with an unfavorable ruling to counties. That the department most impacted by that is the assessor. We were before you at mid-year to request funding of $347,000 to help them through this year. We'll be back to you with proposed budget to request that you provide an ongoing funding source for the assessor. We're going to review these on the department-by-department basis. The auditor, treasurer, tax collector have net county cost savings that are helping them address it for the time being. But this was one of the negative fiscal impacts that we had this year in the midst of, fortunately, what we've seen some very positive ones as well. As we look to 13-14, we're going to be before you in just a few days, over a month from now, to do our proposed budget presentation. Our focus has been on just maintaining current service levels. As Ms. Nino reported, we think the worst is over. We've seen some modest signs of growth, but not time to put the foot on the gas pedal. So our goal is just to stability. And to that end, we issue departments the same net county costs or general fund contributions that they received in the 12-13 year. I think it's important to note when we do that, that's not maintaining exact service levels, because they end up having to absorb increases in retirement charges, increases in health insurance, and increases in utilities. So departments are still suffering a loss, but fortunately, because of the net county cost savings program, many of our general fund departments have built up capacity to absorb these increases and are able to maintain service levels at the same level. We are developing a multi-year strategy. We call it a long-range model, because we have several things on the horizon that we need to account for. As you're aware of, we're building new jail beds as part of our AB 900 project. That's going to bring with it some fairly significant staffing costs that we're going to have to be prepared to address in 16-17. I mentioned retirement charges are projected to continue to go up. And so we are doing long-range modeling all the way through the 17-18 year. And we will be before you showing you some of how that modeling is looking, so that you have an idea for, as you make your policy decisions, what things that we're facing as we move ahead. Our proposed budget will be available to the public on May 31st, 2013, and then we'll be back before you June 11th for the public hearing and our proposed budget presentation. As always, you'll find our third quarter financial report located on www.stancounty.com under budget. And with that, we have several recommendations for you today to accept our third quarter financial report, authorize the Chief Executive Officer and Auditor Controller to make the necessary adjustments, also to authorize the Auditor Controller to make necessary fiscal year-end accounting entries to accurately report expenses and revenue in the appropriate fiscal year, and adjust appropriations as necessary as approved by the Chief Executive Officer. A lot of times as we head into the year end, we will do actuaries and have to book various things onto the books in the current fiscal year. This recommendation gives the auditor authority to make those adjustments. And we're recommending the use of $813,489 in appropriations for contingencies. This is for the shortfall in county court funding revenue as well as the shortfall in the county council revenue. That requires a 4/5 vote of your board. Asking you to amend the salary and position allocation resolution to reflect the recommendations contained in the report, be effective May 8th. To approve contracts and agreements where the cumulative amounts are $100,000 or greater since July 1st, 2010, and then to set the public hearing for the proposed budget on June 11th. That concludes our presentation, and we'd be happy to answer any questions you may have.
Great. Any questions of staff? It's easy. All right, I'm going to open it up for the audience. Does anyone have any questions or comments? You guys do good work. All right, back to the board, I guess, for board comments. Supervisor Withrow.
Just a couple quick things, Stan. So, you know, we talk about the decrease in use of funds by $2.1 million, I guess, in total. But that's not all general fund, right? That's
no,
done all over the place. You know.
A lot of that was we saw in the community services agency
right.
where they're bringing in about $14 million of revenue and
right.
offsetting. So actually that is benefiting the general fund, though, because they're going to be able to reduce the amount of general fund contribution we have to give them this year by $1.9 million.
So, and have we identified exactly, I mean, do we know exactly how much that is? The other thing is we talk about in here is the $1.9 million out of CSA that's going to go back to the general fund during the net county cost impact. But we're not talking 1.9 is the net effect going to the general fund, right, of this 2.1. It's diluted throughout the budget, right? Not just going to the general fund.
Correct. So when we report in total that the third quarter report is reducing our reliance on one-time funding, that is for all county budgets.
Right.
In this particular report, the vast majority of that is happening in CSA, which will have a general fund benefit that pretty closely correlates.
Okay. Okay. But we're so, and the other thing I just want to point out, when we talk about that we're, you know, this is a reduction of $2.1 million, it's a reduction of the amount of fund balance, retained earnings that we're having to use. We're still using retained earnings, using our savings accounts basically to fund things, but we're just using less of it.
Correct.
Is what we're doing here. So I don't want to really tease. We've got this $2.1 million, and we're just using less of our savings account.
Exactly,
for this year, is how it's turning out, okay.
And unfortunately, Supervisor Withrow, it's still much higher than I know this board would like to see as far as in our spending plan. So that's why one of our key priorities, as this board has suggested to us over and over again, to reduce the level of one-time spending for ongoing operations.
Great, okay. And then I know for the most part, this is all good news. And we're kind of heading in a better direction, but still I want us to be cautiously optimistic, not thinking, here we go, things are taking off. The other thing is the pension plan, as you mentioned, the 16%, still a 16% increase in pension that we're looking at here, and that's just something that we're gonna have to deal with more and more. And you know, we live and die by the stock market with the type of pension plan we have with the defined benefit plan, and that's just not... That doesn't provide for stability at all. You know, we have no control over that. And so that's the scary thing that's always out there that we have to deal with. And I know we're working towards that with new hires and things like that, but we do need to figure out a way that we are less dependent on the stock market and hopefully move our pension plan to more of a defined contribution plan rather than defined benefit that will deal with that better. So, otherwise, thank you guys. Great job as always. It's just like I said, as we had Lauren's report last week, and just we so much depend on the numbers that come out of Lauren's office and how you guys put these things together that allow us to manage this county so well. So thank you guys for what you're doing.
Okay.
I think I can echo Supervisor Withrow's comments and add one more, and that's the affordable health care. There's projections that we're going to see 25-30% increase in health care costs. So
I thought it was supposed to be affordable.
Any other comments? Okay, I have a few comments. I Supervisor Withrow used the exact term that I have written down, cautiously optimistic, and I used that back at the 6 month or the mid-year, you know, after coming through 4 years, my first 4 years, where it was just extremely bad. Now it's less bad. How's that? And I have a better feeling, and I know that the growth in sales tax have, in many of the programming areas, have really stemmed what is the use of our one-time fees. I walked into a meeting. I wanted everyone to know. I walked into a meeting of the senior leadership team about 3 weeks ago, and up on the board, you guys had on the TV screen the 17-18 budget, which is actually 5 years out. And I remember asking how you can project out that far, and you can't with certainty. But unless you have a plan looking outward that far, you're doomed for failure. So I want to commend everyone. I know that it changes 15 times. As a matter of fact, this presentation probably changed in the last couple of weeks, but that's why we do so well. That's why we're not surprised. That's why we don't have tons of questions. It's also important for everyone to know that we have a more than $1 billion budget, and of that, only about 14.5% is actually discretionary revenue, which the supervisors really have some say in, and some of that's not even true. It's legally mandated matches. So we're not working with a lot of money. A lot of it is pass-through money. There are mandates that are passed down, and so they each take a little slice of that pie. Supervisor O'Brien talked about ACA implementation. I know we talked on it. We're not sure where that's going. They haven't written all the rules. We're fighting, but we're scared, to say the least. The psychiatric care, I was just thinking about some of these things. Foster care came out better than we thought. Realignment, we'll see what the growth funding, because sales tax has been tracking above expectation. I would think there's going to be a little higher bump in that, which will be good. We talked about property tax administration fees. It is important for everyone to understand what this means to San Luis County. We've had a pretty strict no backfill policy over the years as a board to not backfill if money is cut. And you know, there's some different expectations, but this is a service that is provided from the county to the schools, to the cities. We're collecting taxes. We're making sure the taxes are distributed. We're assessing properties. And it's important to know, because if the state doesn't come in and fix this, this portion, we're going to be stuck in a very untenable situation of what to do there, because it's the collection system. If we can't assess properties, if the auditor can't disperse the funds, if we don't have, it will hurt everyone from the schools on down, to the children, from us on down to the medically indigent. So I think it's very important that we everyone understands that. And with that, I had a couple of requests. And number one request is I would love to have CSAC come and present to our board first and foremost about the Affordable Care Act, because it's going to hit us like a Mack truck. And I've been involved in this for 3 or 4 months, and I feel like I don't have a good grasp. And I would like for them to come and present to the board. It's number one. The second, and although we're standing here in very uncertain budgetary times, and I'm cautiously optimistic, I would like to ask the CEO to bring a recommendation back to look at restoring 1%, potentially restoring 1% back to our employees, the 6%. And I don't know that we can afford it, and I think we'll have that discussion, but I would like to see what the numbers are. You know, our employees came to the table quickly and really helped us in the situation, and I would like to look at that. I don't know where that goes. I don't know that we can afford it, but if we do, we'll take back eight hours or one day of time for a low time. Something I'd like to explore. So, Supervisor Monteith?
Yes, I would like to make a comment on the restoration of 1%. I think the word I appreciate most is caution. It is difficult for me to support a restoration of 1% employee salary, even with the removal of one furlough day. Actually, furlough days did reduce our costs, but it didn't reduce our cost of business. We just eliminated so many hours. So as we go back in eliminating that, why it does increase our cost of doing business. And while I understand there's been an economic impact on the employees and also on the reduction of service to the community, our problems have been in the economy. We don't have economic stability. I'll go as far as say we don't have stability in the state legislature or the federal government right now. Nobody knows what's going on. You heard various things we discussed today where we really just don't know where we're going to be in the economics and the services and unfunded mandates and et cetera. And so I still, though, want to express to our county employees and the citizens and the community as a whole is we do appreciate your understanding and our financial condition and trying to work it out. I think what we need to do at this time is to strive for stability. And stability is something where we build a foundation so that as times do improve, we have a foundation to build on. I don't want us to be put in a position or put the employees in a position where on a short-term basis we have some fine returns or the money appears to be there. And 6 months later or 12 months later, the money is gone and we have to come back to you and sit down and try to negotiate with you. And I don't want to put you on a yo-yo. I want us to start with, at this time, I think it's important that we stand with some discipline so that we can build a good foundation in addressing the needs we have and being able to afford the needs we have. I understand the request for the increase because you stepped forward, employees of the county stepped forward and agreed to reductions. I just don't feel it is time that we have enough stability in order to address it at this time. And that's my personal opinion. And life is an uphill sometimes, but I know that sooner or later we'll overcome it. And I believe Stanislaus County is still one of the best counties in the state that has been strong enough to address the challenges without kicking the can down the road. We've asked you to face it head on, and I believe we have. And with that, I hope we continue, and then we will have a better Stanislaus County, and we will not be caught up in what some of these counties are confronted with.
Very valuable comments. We probably don't disagree much on your statements. Supervisor DeMartini.
I just want to address the retirement costs of Stan Sarah for the last 8 years. The one good thing is the pension obligation bond is going to end after this year. That means about $11 million that we're not going to have to pay in extra. However, the cost is going up. I believe it could be like as much as 16% this year, which is about $6 million. Don't look for the contributions to go down anytime soon. The actuarial assumptions show that we have an older than usual workforce. And I'm 39, but a lot of people are older than I am, and they're closer to retirement. And we just don't have the younger people coming into the county. And so this has affected the actuarial assumptions into the amount of time people are going to retire and what is going to have to be paid out through the system. Although the retirement system has good returns the last couple of years, we'll probably wind up about a 15% return this year, which is about double what our assumption was. The amount of people retiring is higher than average for an organization our size, and costs will continue to go up for the foreseeable future. I think the next 4 or 5 years at least before it begins, it has any chance of leveling off. And on one note, the Stan Serra does have better than $1.5 billion into the account now, which is the most it's ever had. But we've recovered from huge loss that we took a few years ago. We've had some good years, but it has been up and down, and we've been trying to have an asset allocation to take some of the risk out of the portfolio and these wild swings we've had up and down.
Thank you. Supervisor Withrow?
I just want to reinforce the thought to look at the 1% increase, and I totally understand and agree with Dick, too, as far as we don't want to jump into this too soon, but I think it's worth us looking into. And before I came on, these cuts happened for everyone here, and I think it's because the county reacted so quickly and the employees accepted and reacted to take these cuts. That's part of the reason we're in not as bad a shape as most of the state is. And so not that we're in great shape, but I would very much entertain us looking into the 1%. I guess I don't look at it as a raise. I think of giving back of the 6% we took away. So start to look at giving back this 1%. I would like to propose, if I could exempt ourselves from that. I wouldn't look for us as board members to take back that 1%. I'd like ours to still stay as it is. I don't look to give ourselves a raise here. So I would, and like I said, I don't feel like we're giving our employees a raise. We're just giving them back part of what we took. But I would like to exempt us and not have an increase to ours continue to be at the 6% cut that we've taken along with everybody else. So.
Thank you for your comments, Supervisor O'Brien.
Mr. Chairman, if you're ready, I'll make a motion to approve all staff second recommendations, including the chairman's direction to look at the 1%.
We have a motion.
I will second that.
Did you see that timing of the former chairman came right in? He was done with the conversation. I like it. We cut meetings. All right. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion carries 5-0. Thank you, Supervisor. You're bringing me back into line. I like that. Okay. We're moving on to correspondence.
This board has received a letter from Silgan Containers giving notice of temporary layoff of employees at their Riverbank location at 3250 Patterson Road. Employees are expected to be recalled on July 8, 2013 per the Worker Notification and Retraining Act.
I refer to the Stanislaus Economic Development Workforce Alliance and the Alliance WorkNet.
This board has received a letter from the California Fish and Game Commission regarding the proposed regulatory action relative to the depredation permit application and form and bobcat
depredation.
Thank
you. Refer to the Fish and Wildlife Committee.
I thought it said depreciation. Looking like an accountant. This board has received a letter from the Oakdale Fire Protection District requesting dry period financing for fiscal year 2013-14.
Refer to the Auditor Controller.
This board has received a letter from the California Natural Resources Agency regarding the 2013 petition for temporary change to modify the State Water Project and Central Valley Project authorized places of use.
Refer to the Ag Commissioner and Sealer of Weights and Measures and Department of Public Works.
This board has received a claim as noted on the agenda.
Acknowledge receipt of claims and refer to the CEO's Risk Management Division. Are there any Board of Supervisor reports?
Yes.
Supervisor Monty.
Last Friday, the Healthy Aging, which is Young at Heart, also the Unleashed, the Power of Age, had a celebration, the Age of Movement celebration. They had it at the East La Loma Park. They had a 5K walk to show the activities they get involved in. They had low impact aerobics. They had chair yoga. They had Can Fu. They had line dancing, Can Chai, I don't think I pronounced that correctly, but and Zumba. Now, I would highly suggest that maybe you try to keep up with them and their activities. It might be a surprise. We have a very lively, mature group of people who are continuing to keep healthy, and they had a good time.
Thank you, Supervisor Monteith. Any other board reports? If not, we'll move on to Legislative Fiscal and Management Report, CEO Nino.
I do, Chair, this morning. We are anticipating to see the state's May revised on May 14th. I did receive some recent news. We were anticipating to see the Public Safety Realignment Growth Fund to be the formula distribution for the growth dollars, which was roughly, I think, originally scheduled at $77 million. It looks like that growth fund formula will not be included in the May revised. And that was originally scheduled to be distributed during September of 2013. So that's somewhat unfortunate. This county, this chair, along with our sheriff and our chief of probation, did send a letter to the governor with concerns in regards to the CAO's association's proposed growth formula. So on one hand, I hate seeing the delay, but it's on the other hand, it's somewhat positive because hopefully the Department of Finance comes up with a better proposal that's more equitable among all California counties. And that concludes my report.
One question, are they just delaying the announcement of the formula or saying they're not going to distribute growth money?
My understanding is just being delayed.
Really, we're all arguing on what the formula is.
Good, keep it up.
Yeah, keep it up. Okay.
Progress, I hope.
Yeah. Nothing else for the good of the order. This meeting is adjourned.
Well, good.